If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Inside the Board Study Smarter series, dedicated to helping you learn to think like a question writer so you can study smarter, not harder, and succeed on your exam.
All right. Hey, everyone. This is one of our question dissections, brought to you by DaVinci Academy and Inside the Boards. Check DaVinci Academy at dviacademy.com, where you can find the video to this episode. And as always, thanks for listening. I've mentioned repeatedly that we are revamping and almost relaunching Inside the Boards as a platform or project or business, if you want to pick your term. So expect to see a lot more coming from ITB. Go sign up for an ITB premium subscription or a free subscription on our mobile app, just to stay apprised of everything that we're doing. Really appreciate you listening. And if you find ITB valuable, you know how it goes with podcasts. Tell your friends, leave a review, please. I'd super appreciate that. And reach out by email if there's anything we can do to help you or you would like to get involved. info@insidetheboards.com, helping your fellow students get inside the boards. Thanks for listening. Here is our question dissections pathology case.
Welcome back to another case from DaVinci Cases Inside the Boards edition. I'm Maxwell Cooper from DaVinci Academy with Patrick Beeman from Inside the Boards, and we'll be taking you through this third pathology case today. We'll start out with just reading the question first. So the question is asking, which of the following serum lab values is most likely to be elevated in this patient? So you want to keep that in mind and thinking about what specific lab values might be elevated in this particular case. So the case starts with a 33-year-old woman. So she's a reproductive age woman who is G2P2. So she's had two successful pregnancies and then no significant past medical history, presenting to clinic stating she has not experienced her period in 7 months. She has also been experiencing intermittent headaches and frequent episodes of bilateral milky breast discharge during the same time period. So this is, you know, something that's been going on for a good amount of time. It's not something that just started yesterday. Not experiencing her period, and then she's also having this bilateral milky breast discharge as well. She is not breastfeeding and then does not take any medications. Her only sexual partner is her husband, who had a vasectomy 1 year ago. So that's important to note that if this is her only sexual partner, it's very unlikely that she is pregnant because he had a vasectomy beyond the point of time when this all started. So the vitals are within normal limits. Physical exam is unremarkable. And again, the question is, which of the following serum lab values is most likely to be elevated in this patient? And the answer choices are beta human chorionic gonadotropin, follicle stimulating hormone, prolactin, and estrogen.
So looking at this, yes, some key findings to note. Age, you point out reproductive age woman, history of successful pregnancies, which rules out a few different types of infertility. The amenorrhea of 7 months duration shows that this is a longer term chronic thing. Any amenorrhea in a sub 40-year-old woman needs investigated for primary ovarian insufficiency or primary ovarian failure. It's not normal to have menopause, if you will, which is defined as 1 year without a period, but premature menopause should be thought of as prior to age 40. Average age is 51, but we'll get into that, I'm sure, at some other point. The headaches and galactorrhea are also significantly notable as well. So physical exam is unremarkable, I would say, is a pertinent positive, because we'll see here that there are some physical exam findings with her diagnosis that are worth keeping in mind. Moving on to which of the following serum lab values is most likely to be elevated in this patient. A is beta human chorionic gonadotropin, B, follicle stimulating hormone, C, prolactin, and D, estrogen. And the correct answer here is prolactin. So her prolactin is going to be elevated, most likely.
Let's go over some of the endocrinology behind this, and then we'll come back and go through the answer choices and explain why that's the right answer. And hopefully doing this also will help elucidate that as well. So again, you know, with pituitary regulation, you have the hypothalamus, which regulates both the anterior and posterior pituitary, which each secrete their own set of hormones. So the anterior pituitary secretes a number of hormones, which can be remembered by the mnemonic flat pig without an I. So you have FSH, follicle stimulating hormone, luteinizing hormone, LH, adrenocorticotropin hormone, thyroid stimulating hormone, prolactin, and growth hormone. And then on the posterior pituitary, there's only two you have to remember: antidiuretic hormone, or ADH, and then oxytocin.
Sorry to interrupt, but let me add, just remember ADH also is sometimes called vasopressin.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. So the other thing to remember with these is that there's, you know, a complex interplay of feedback inhibition and stimulation and these different mechanisms. So you want to keep these straight. So we'll go through these here. So remember, with the ones we want to focus on here are mainly FSH, LH, prolactin, and estrogen, which are kind of the, you know, kind of the main players, if you will, in the female reproductive endocrinology aspects. So you have hypothalamus, which secretes GnRH, which is gonadotropin releasing hormone, which then goes on to stimulate the anterior pituitary to release FSH and LH, which then go down,
collectively called the gonadotropins.
Yes, yes. Which then go to stimulate the ovaries, which do a number of things, but one of those is to secrete estrogen. And then estrogen obviously is, you know, a main driver in many of the different functions of the female reproductive system. And then if you remember, estrogen kind of serves as a feedback inhibition loop and actually comes back and both inhibits GnRH release from the hypothalamus and FSH and LH release from the anterior pituitary gland. Now, on the other side, the anterior pituitary also releases prolactin, and that actually goes on to stimulate breast tissue, and it stimulates milk production. And obviously, the prolactin is often increased during pregnancy and especially during breastfeeding. And if you remember, this is kind of a unique regulation, though, with the hypothalamus. So usually the hypothalamus is secreting molecules that stimulate the anterior pituitary. In prolactin's case, that's actually reversed. It secretes dopamine, and dopamine actually inhibits prolactin release. So that's, you got to keep that, because the boards likes to ask about that. It's kind of a different and can easily trip people up if they don't keep that straight. So the other thing to remember is prolactin actually also goes back and negatively inhibits the hypothalamus from releasing gonadotropin releasing hormone. In this case, what you want to remember is that what this patient has is a prolactinoma, which is an anterior pituitary tumor, which secretes high levels of prolactin. And so if you have increased levels of prolactin, you're going to stimulate the breast tissue, and that's how we get galactorrhea. The other thing, though, is that prolactin is going to feedback inhibit on the hypothalamus and decrease GnRH release from the hypothalamus, which then in turn will decrease release of FSH and LH from the anterior pituitary and also decrease estrogen release as well. And by decreasing estrogen production, that's how you get this secondary amenorrhea. So with all of that in mind, we will come back to the answer choices here and kind of go through these different hormones and why the only one of this group that's elevated in this case is prolactin.
Yes. So I love this. I, as many of you know, am an OBGYN, and Max is a resident. So I may have to do a little bit of pimping here. All right, but I'll throw you some softballs. Because Max is a radiology resident, so I'm sure that you try to stop at the bare minimum of endocrinology you have to know. Okay, so first choice, beta human chorionic gonadotropin, or HCG for short. So a few things why we can rule out this being elevated as the most likely elevation. Max, you mentioned it before, probably the most common cause of amenorrhea without considering anything else in a reproductive age woman is
pregnancy.
That is correct. Pregnancy. So amenorrhea always is going to need an HCG part of the workup. Pretty much any reproductive age woman who presents in an OBGYN context should get an HCG, just because pregnancy can do things like cause galactorrhea. Headaches can increase in pregnancy, and certainly, of course, causes amenorrhea, even if, well, I won't get into that. Although, you know, there are pathologic states in pregnancy that cause bleeding. So what makes us rule out beta human chorionic gonadotropin as the most likely elevated in this? If we said that the most common cause of amenorrhea in a reproductive age woman is pregnancy, which is a state of human chorionic gonadotropin excess, I would say this constellation of symptoms is the thing that most likely makes us want to pause or cross out beta human chorionic gonadotropin as the most likely elevated, because she's experienced a classic presentation of amenorrhea with headaches and galactorrhea, which you should really group in your mind together as a prolactinoma or hyperprolactin state. The other supporting evidence is that the patient's only sexual partner had a vasectomy a year ago. That is a time frame that allows any spermatic reserve post-vasectomy to be depleted. They usually recommend about 3 months, if I recall, prior to relying on a vasectomy for birth control. So we're outside that window. Side note, people are always worried that the USMLE question writers, the NBME, and the osteopathic NBOME might be trying to trick you. I would say take information as given. If her only sexual partner is her husband, who had a vasectomy a year ago, you can rely on that information. If it's more fluid and it's the patient reports or some more doubtful way of putting that, I think would rely on what is given as the information in your exams, even though in real life patients can be reluctant to share information that could be considered embarrassing. So side note over. Next answer choice is follicle stimulating hormone. So with FSH being increased, you know, you can get pituitary adenomas that secrete FSH by itself, but that's rare. It tends to be prolactin as the most likely pituitary functional tumor. With an FSH, actually, I think on this slide, you're trying to show that in the event of a prolactinoma or hyperprolactin state, you get negative feedback, which decreases GnRH, the hormone that is responsible for stimulating or increasing the gonadotropins, hence its name, gonadotropin-releasing hormone, FSH and LH being those two hormones. And if those decrease, less is coming from the pituitary, and the end result is, among other things, a decrease in estrogen synthesis in the ovary, and you'd see a decrease most likely in the serum lab measurement of estrogen. I suppose it is worth mentioning that if you're doing an endocrine question, the way to approach these is to think about primarily first the abnormal hormone situation instead of trying to deal with you know, the whole pathway in its normal state, I would be like, okay, increased prolactin, what are all the effects that, and I like how you wrote this down here with the up down arrows as appropriate. With endocrine questions, if you think, what is an increased FSH? Like, let's say you were stuck on that in this instance, you would most likely see an increase in estrogen. But one case that is worth noting is that if the problem hormone is a lack of estrogen, as is the case in menopause, the anterior pituitary is going to be trying to stimulate estrogen because it's not getting any negative feedback. And so in the case of menopause, you would see an increase in FSH. Hopefully that's helpful. Next, we are moving on to prolactin. What else to note about prolactinomas? So prolactinoma, hyperprolactinemic state. As I mentioned before, this is going to stimulate the mammary glands to produce breast milk, which is why you get this galactorrhea. It can be unilateral or bilateral, but I think on the boards, you're probably most likely going to see a general bilateral picture. So you've got increased prolactin is going to decrease or feed back to decrease gonadotropins and in turn decrease the production of ovarian hormones. Remember, OBGYNs, endocrinologists think of this as the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis. So all of these things together in interplay. Prolactinomas, being a pituitary adenoma, can exert a mass effect. It's worth noting that there are two types of prolactinomas distinguished: the micro version, which are defined as 1 centimeter or less, and then the macro version, which are greater than that. When you get a macro or a larger tumor, this is a situation where you're most likely going to get those sorts of things that are a result of mass effect, like headache, right? There's only so much space in the cranium. And importantly, and this can be kind of a dead ringer for these cases, and I mentioned before some physical exam findings that are notable in hyperprolactinemic states or when you have a prolactinoma, and namely that's visual changes in the form of a bilateral temporal hemianopia or hemianopsia I've heard before. So essentially, what is that? Well, the optic chiasm, when it's compressed, the fibers there that cross and are responsible for your temporal visual field, the, you know, more peripheral, they get interrupted. And so you're left with kind of a tunnel vision or a narrowed visual field.
I think those were all great points. You nailed it with the visual field defect. I think the other way people may describe that is sometimes the patients will come in and say that it could be as simple as vision changes, or I've seen things where, like, you know, people lose their peripheral vision. So sometimes the question writers may try to describe that to you in kind of a less obvious way. So just keep that in mind. And then obviously, usually if there's the exam component included, that will be included on there as well. And then obviously the headaches can be, you know, there's a long list of differential, but when you know, put the whole picture together, it makes sense that when a patient has a, like Patrick mentioned, a tumor growing the pituitary, you can get some mass effect and cause headaches in that regard as well. So again, it's all about, as Patrick's been pointing out here, it's all about putting the whole picture together.
And then our final answer choice, D, was estrogen. So in the case of hyperprolactinemia, what happens to estrogen? Well, again, it's a situation where you have increased prolactin inhibiting gonadotropin releasing hormone from the hypothalamus, which in turn decreases the gonadotropins, and you get ultimately a lack of stimulation of the ovaries, which results in decreased estrogen. The only thing I would mention here is, what does a hyperestrogen state look like? If you have too much estrogen, you see this in, for instance, PCOS. You can get some of the findings noted in this case, like abnormal uterine bleeding. But PCOS, probably the most common hyperestrogen state, which is a result of a hyperandrogen state, because in the periphery, you get estrogen or aromatization of your androgens, turning into weaker estrogens, which in turn will stimulate the endometrial tissue, which is important because in these sorts of unopposed estrogen states, you're at an increased risk, notably of endometrial hyperplasia or cancer. I mean, you can also get hyperestrogen from taking it, you know, exogenously, which is why people will say you need to have progesterone on board when giving people estrogen who still have a uterus. Not a big deal to give estrogen alone in like post-perimenopausal states if a person doesn't have a uterus. You can also have functional tumors or like granulosa cell tumors, other oncologic problems that will produce high estrogen, but it's probably worth mentioning at a different time.
I think Patrick hit most of it. I think it's just putting the whole picture together. You know, you see reproductive age woman coming in with bilateral milky discharge from the breasts. And then you have, you know, obviously you always want to be thinking about pregnancy. This, in this case, we give you that the husband had the vasectomy a year ago. And like Patrick said, in real life, it's a completely different story. But when it comes to the question on the SMLE or on your med school exams, you want to just take it kind of as is. Again, they're not, the question writer is not trying to trick you. And you kind of have to take it at face value. So again, you could kind of rule out pregnancy. The other thing is in the real world, in the office, they're going to do a pregnancy test anyways. And so you know where, you know, right away whether or not that is the case or whether you have elevated beta HCG or not. The other thing is that, you know, again, the prolactinomas, you want to keep in mind these, you know, visual field defects that we talked about. And then again, I think I'll just reiterate what Patrick said with when it comes to endocrinology and just in general, it's all about reaction. You know, you want to think about with each of these choices, what are they increase or decrease in reaction to what? Patrick gave you a lot of good reasons as to why each of these would be elevated in certain scenarios. And the one that fits best with this scenario is prolactin. That's all we've got for you on this one, guys. Again, you can watch the video on the Da Vinci Academy YouTube channel, youtube.com/DaVinciAcademyMed. And then obviously you can listen to the audio on the Inside the Boards platform or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Happy studying.